Welcome to the Team EF Coaching Performance Podcast, where we take information from the highest level of sport and make it accessible for all cyclists. Today, I'm sitting down with a special guest, Mr. Nicky Sorensen, who is a retired professional cyclist who raced professionally for teams like CSC and Saxo Bank Tinkoff from 1999 to 2014. So, 16 years in the pro peloton. Throughout Nicky's professional career, he racked up an astonishing 1,244 professional race days, covering over 197,380 kilometers of racing. Nicky took a total of 12 victories in his career, one of which was a win on stage 12 of the 2009 Tour de France. Then Nicky became a director sportif up until 2022, all before joining Team EF Coaching. Nicky, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you not only here on the show, but as a part of Team EF Coaching.
Well, thanks for the opportunity and thanks for the nice intro. I did not know those numbers, so that's a nice thing to know about the race. It was the race kilometers and so that's really nice to know. Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity of this. It's a great thing that you've been reaching out to me, and I'm super excited about joining your coaching team. Coaching riders is a wonderful thing. It's such a positive thing to be able to coach another person and be part of the development and be part of the all these positive things, the good results, and as a coach you feel you're part of it in a very positive way. So thanks for this, man.
No, my pleasure. You know, what's interesting is there are so many great professional riders who leave the sport and you still want to participate in the sport, but don't necessarily have an avenue to do that. And when I saw that you were already doing some coaching on your own, I said, wow, here's somebody with so much experience that has the opportunity to impact people's lives out there who want to get better at cycling. And he wants to coach. So it was a no-brainer for me to reach out to you and try to get you on the team. And I'm so glad that you were interested in joining us. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got an action-packed podcast for you today. Well, I don't know if it's action-packed, but I'm sure Nicky's got some stories that are action-packed. And I've got a list of questions because, you know, when you spend 16 years in the pro peloton, you gain so much knowledge and so much information about so many different things. And I really want to extract some core details for all the listeners today. So my first question for you is, Nicky, you spent 16 years living your life as a top level athlete in a world where only the most dedicated athletes survive. Looking back now, how would you describe your evolution as a rider throughout your career?
Well, if we go back to the start, before I was a rider, I was a runner, middle and short distance runner, and I started pretty late with riding. I was actually 19 the first year I was a rider, and then it was going up through the ranks, saying from national level, going further up to being as amateur in Italy. Went down to Italy to give the shot there at becoming a pro, so a bit of a higher level there. And then I came and joined the Danish, what corresponds to a second division team, professional team. Throughout these going up through the ranks, the competition just got harder and harder. And then when I joined World Tour at the age of, I think I was 22 at that time, 21, 22, I really realized that this is a super high level here. It's like you have around more than 20 generations of cyclists where you have the best of them all in the world. And I kind of had to reassess my goals a little bit about what I wanted in cycling after I joined there, because before turning pro, I thought I'm going to win the Tour de France and stuff like this, and quickly realized that this is going to be a difficult one. So, but I had a good career, yeah.
So that's fascinating. You say you started out with shot put?
No, running. I was a runner, middle to long distance runner.
I don't know how I misheard you, but I thought you said shot put. I must have misheard you. So you were a middle to long distance runner. And I think we've seen a lot of guys come from, you know, we had Mike Woods on our team in the past, right? Mike Woods came from running, and obviously everybody knows that story, but that's fascinating. So as you entered the ranks, things were a lot different when you started, you know, out as a professional rider than they are today, where now young guys get an opportunity to ride and win races fairly early on in their career. Was it like that for you, or did you really have to earn your stripes every step of the way when you started out?
It was totally different. First of all, like the scouting for talents in the pro cycling was not non-existent, but not even close to being at the level like it is today. So a lot less talents came through the rankings, and that meant that the professional riders were a lot more, established for a longer period of time. And today it changes a lot. You have like mid to high level riders. Suddenly within a few years, it just goes further down into, because all these young talents come up through the rankings. So it's changed a lot since back then. I turned pro in 99, as you mentioned, it was a whole different thing back then.
Right. So you come into the pro cycling world, you start earning your stripes, 10 years go by, and you get a Tour de France stage victory. What did that mean to you at that point?
Well, it was kind of like, I knew I was a good professional rider, but I wanted kind of like a diploma in order to show that I was a good professional rider. And that diploma for me was winning a stage in a Grand Tour. I did win one in Vuelta a España, in Tour of Spain. But the one in the Tour de France was kind of like the one where I could say, okay, I did it. I knew I could show I was a good rider, because throughout my career, mostly a domestique rider. I was helping other riders win. It was a choice I made myself to help others win, because I kind of felt like I didn't have the level to be at the biggest races without winning. But that feeling of winning that stage was incredible. It was coming into the finish line area, and it was packed with people. And I came from somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you know, on small roads, no spectators, and kind of like I kind of realized that I can win this one, you know. I went solo coming into the finish line, and all these people suddenly cheering at the same moment as I found out that I took a really big win. It was I can't describe it, but it was pretty intense.
Well, the way you won it, and so for all the listeners, you guys can look at this victory. It's on YouTube. But the way you won it was a bike racer's win, right? You were in the breakaway. You had attacked the breakaway. You had one guy with you who you felt you were stronger than. 3K to go. It looked like you guys were about to get caught by the strong chasers, and you jumped them. And you jumped them at the perfect time, because the road was just transitioning from a little bit slow to a slight fast downhill. And you just took a huge acceleration and carried that speed all the way to the finish line. When I watched that victory, you know, before the podcast, I was like, wow, what a bike racer's win. So I had to ask you about it on air and share this story with everybody. You, and for the listeners, I suggest you go and watch it, because it's a good one. So
I'm glad you noticed the acceleration, not to linger too much on it, but because Lance Armstrong actually, they came to me the day after in the peloton and said the same thing, man. That acceleration you did, that he saw it on television. He wasn't in the breakaway.
But it was
special acceleration, that one there.
It was perfect timing. And I think for a lot of our listeners out there, these are the things that, you know, will make you a better rider, because where you accelerated on the road just amplified the amount of power that you applied to the pedals. So had you done that 100 meters earlier, it would have been a lot harder on your legs to carry any speed over the top of that little rise. It was a small little rise. We're talking a 1% gradient, 2% gradient, something really small. But where you accelerated, it just maximized your speed, because as you were peaking your power, you came down over the top of this little crest and just flew through this valley. And I'm not sure what the wind was like that day, if the wind was maybe catching you on a tailwind. Yeah. So it was just perfect.
But thanks, man. Thanks.
So, Nikki, transitioning to a director sportif role after a long career in pro cycling seems like a natural fit. As a professional rider, you learn from your directors and kind of become a director on your own as you build a closer relationship with each event, all the parkours, road conditions, and the weather associated to it all. How would you describe your transition from the athlete to the mentor as a director?
Yeah, it's a little bit like you said. It felt like a natural thing for me with all the experience I had, because I chose to become a domestique rider, to be a helper. I got a chance to do a lot of the biggest races in the world. I did a lot of the biggest races, and that was because I was a helper, you know, a part of the team. At the same time, during the latter years of my career, I also had the role of being road captain, or sometimes at some of these races. So being the eyes of the sports director out on the road, he doesn't see a lot from the car. So I could be the one that would take, the decisions, mid-level decisions, and leave the high-end decisions for the sports director. So it was a role that kind of like, I grew into that one. And then they were mentioning in the team at that time, I was in Saxo Bank, it was called at that time, that they were interested in me becoming sports director afterwards. And so that was the way I came into it. And again, also, I wanted kind of also to, first of all, to explore how good I could become as a sports director. Mm. And then also to give back to the sport, give back to the sport that I felt like I got received so much from, and give that further on to the next generations to try and help them achieve some big goals as well.
So how would you describe that to the audience? Because we in cycling, we have all these names for things. And if you've never been a pro cyclist, you might not know what the roles are that represent these names. So as a road captain, what are your duties? What's your job?
It's basically to guide the troops, the other riders in the peloton, take decisions in the moment when there's no time for the riders to explain what is going on in the race to the sports directors. And then say, for example, are you covering breakaways in the beginning, letting them know who jumps, and do we chase, do we not chase? Because there's no time often to take these decisions over the radio when you have split decisions, split seconds to take those decisions. So that was part of it. And then it was just, it's a hard job because being a road captain, you're kind of like responsible for many things. And you feel also you're responsible for a lot of the riders, but at the same time, it's a super interesting part of the tactical aspect of the races, because you have an impact. You're a sports director that understands how to use a road captain in the right way, give responsibilities of decision making in the race. Is a road captain, if you choose the right road captain as well, is a huge tool for these sports directors and for the teams as well. Because I got a shock sack when I found out when I was in the car as a sports director, how little you actually see. You see almost nothing of what goes on in the race. So
right.
So a good high level road captain is very important in my opinion.
So are you the guy in the Velon videos yelling, "Stay right, stay right"?
Yeah.
That's you. Interesting. And it's what's really fascinating about it is you got to experience all three sides of it. You started out as a rider, then you became the road captain, and then you were in the chair in the car at the back of the group talking to the road captain. So that's some fascinating perspective. So Nikki, I'm sure you had many standout moments in your career as a rider. But thinking back, can you pinpoint any moments that really changed the way you saw the sport or forced you to evolve?
Well, it was probably like I talked a little bit about going up through the rankings and seeing how much I needed to develop as a rider in order to be relevant in the sport, because the level was so high, and that was also part of the decision why, together with the team manager Bjarne Riis at that time, we took the decision that I was going to be mostly a rider helping other riders trying to win races. This way, my career would probably be prolonged if I did that job in a good way. So I think that was the biggest wake up call. That was actually coming into the pro peloton and kind of like having to come to terms with my level and how much I probably could and could not improve as a rider, and then assess what I could do in the pro peloton according to my abilities.
How difficult was that for you? Because you know, the difference between the guy who wins the race and the guy who helps the guy win the race is what, 1%? You know, so how difficult is that conversation that you have with yourself when your whole life, like you said, in training, you thought you were going to, you know, be a Tour de France winner. And then when you became a pro rider, you realize, well, maybe not. So was that a difficult decision, or was it just obvious for you and your passion to participate in the sport overrid that desire to want to be the Tour de France champion? How did you work that out internally?
Well, it was kind of like I didn't to start with do it in the sense that it was going to be a static thing, that it's going to be, this is going to be how my career pans out for the next many years. But it was, I think I would take year by year. I always had as a rider, and that's also what I try to teach the riders that I coach, is to always try and see ways where you can improve. And that was my goal throughout the whole career, seeing ways where I could improve as a rider. And that's the beautiful thing about cycling, is that there's so many variables you can use in order to improve. It can be training, it can be tactical tactical decisions, it could be the way you use your gearing, the choice of material and stuff like this. So and then also back to being a helper, that was a thing also that I spoke to Bjarne Riis at that time a lot about, is that being a guy that would sit in the wind for a long periods of time in the races, it builds a lot of fatigue in a good way, and that you can transform into being strong, very strong, if you're like able
I like to call that depth.
It gives a lot of depth, and so I kind of used that in order to try and become a better rider, taking the win for other riders. It was not my idea, it was actually Bjarne's idea. It was the way he sold it to me. I then never took the next step up the ladder in order to be one of the stars. But at the same time, I never regret that I spent so much time helping others win.
Can you think back on some of the different things that you had spent a lot of time developing as a domestique?
Well, I was always a rider that was very much, maybe in the zone is a wrong word for it, but very much focused on my power output in the races, being as efficient as possible, minimizing those accelerations in the peloton, sitting in the right place at the peloton in order for it to be spending as little energy as possible, apart from taking the win for the guys that was helping. So I was never a guy that focused a lot about where I was in the race and stuff like this, remembering climbs and stuff like this, and terrain and what exactly happened in the race. I was more like in the zone. I don't know if that answers the question that you asked there.
That's very interesting insight. I think that's a really cool perspective, and it shares with us kind of how you navigated throughout the peloton, right? Like being in the moment and just taking one climb after the other instead of obsessing over the details that are coming is definitely one way to look at the sport. But as a domestique, right, like I'm sure there were different components to your game that you really wanted to evolve over time. For example, did you ever think about, oh, hey, you know, like I got to spend a lot of time in the wind. I need to really improve my ability to ride, you know, just below threshold for like 2 hours at a time. Or, hey, I want to be able to make an impact for my main rider 5K to go. So I really need to hone in on building some good explosive ability so that I can make the three climbs leading into the final before the finishing climb. Did you ever think about developing components like that throughout your career?
Yes, but not enough. Not enough, Zach. It's one of the things I kind of regret for my own career is that I never really worked with a coach that many years. I did my own coaching back then.
Interesting.
Yeah. And at the same time, we did a lot of racing compared to what you do today. I had the record of the whole peloton for that year of most races. I think it was 111 days of racing in a season.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
wow.
Compared to an intense season this today, how much is that? 70 days, 75 days.
Maybe. Yeah, if you're doing 70 races, that's a lot of races.
Yeah. So, but that's one of the things that I regret, that I didn't spend more time actually doing strategy on these things. But at the same time, I knew how to do some high level training. I learned it from at the time as being a runner. I knew the principles of interval training and all that stuff and recovery and all the things that I learned pretty early on, because at that time running was they were more advanced in terms of training than the pro peloton. It's also, I think that's changed a lot over the years, but there weren't too many good coaches in cycling back then. Whereas today it's totally different. It's a high level of coaching in coaches in cycling, and it's really developing a lot at for now. Yeah, but that's the thing that I did my own training most of the time. I had a few coaches. Bjarne Riis was coaching me 1 year, and I had another coach 1 or 2 years, and that's it. Otherwise, I did it myself.
But I mean, you really had the hard man's role in the sport of cycling. Like when you're doing 111 race days in a calendar, you don't have time to go and do periodized blocks of training. You really have to show up and rock out as hard as you can on race day and then spend the rest of the time recovering. Like that's just the bottom line. I mean, you did 1200 plus race days in your career. That is mind blowing. Like, so, you know, thinking back now, you said that that's maybe a small point of, you know, regret looking back, is that maybe you didn't take the time or didn't have the opportunity to go and develop different components of your rider craft. Is that something that you really focus on with the riders that you do coach today, is developing unique abilities to participate in the sport?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, looking at that, where are the areas where we really need to work on, and at the same time doing what I call a polarized training, to be sure to work all the aspects of training from the very short accelerations or up to the more long endurance wise, definitely. Yeah, but it's definitely a thing that is super important to find out what kind of rider you're dealing with and what is the next step going to be in terms of improving that rider, or even improving on the skills, the strongest suits of that rider. Yeah.
One of the things I love about bringing on ex-professional riders into the coaching team is that intimate relationship with the sport itself. I had a great conversation with a medical doctor at World Championships. And, you know, we kind of came to the conclusion that you could have a PhD in exercise physiology or whatever it is you studied. And that's really just the foundation to start to understand the sport of cycling. Whereas the pro cyclist, somebody like you who has done 1,200 races, you have your PhD in the sport of cycling, right? Like an unbelievable amount of hours spent in competition. And so that intimate relationship you have with all of those micro accelerations, the muscular endurance you're going to need to participate in 140 kilometer Grand Fondo, the type of accelerations that are going to happen, what the inflammation is going to be like on a long sustained climb, all of these different components, you're able to look at a parkour and say, look, your goal is to come top 10 in your age category. The people in your age category are going this fast. You're going to need to do this, this, and this, and this to be that person that you want to become. So I think it's really, I think it's misunderstood how much value somebody like you can really bring to anybody's, you know, cycling life and help them really achieve those goals because of that real, there's just no fluff in terms of the relationship you have with understanding what it takes to achieve the goals is what I'm trying to say. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly. And then also a thing that when you have been a rider yourself, one thing that you do understand that's the recovery after races, how important it is. And back to the thing that can you actually measure exactly how hard a race or a training workout has been? It's very difficult to measure it exactly because there's so many factors that comes into play when you race, you know, which doesn't measure on the power meter or maybe not even on the heart rate, stress, all these kinds of stress that you put yourself under, all these micro accelerations, which just such a big thing in races, you know, how do you measure those? And that's the thing where I've seen myself coaches over the years that bringing the rider into the season, it goes very well. And the rider is really fit coming into the season. But then you kind of see this trend that goes like this for some riders over the season. And one of the reasons for that is also that they don't understand how much time of recovery you actually need after some of these races, in my opinion.
Right. I think it's also one of the things we saw this year in racing that really kind of had me thinking that cycling, as many, we've made a lot of advancements in the last 10 years in training, like a tremendous amount of advancements. But if we look at, you know, the core strategy behind the wins at the biggest races this year, if we look at Paris-Roubaix, if we look at the Tour de France, and if we look at World Championships, just to name a few, we'll see much more traditional approaches into building form into those races. Like you said, you raced 112 days before, or 112 days in one season, right? We didn't see that in Vanderpool this year racing Paris-Roubaix. It was a slow, mythological build into fitness to be ready for Roubaix. Everybody was kind of questioning his form in the races leading into it. Was he really that guy, right? And the same thing going into World Championships, where he used the Tour de France like a training ride. He never went above his limit. And so I think, you know, to your point there, at the highest level of sport, we've really honed in on that recovery aspect and not going above and beyond your limit when you don't need to. And I think that's actually something that applies to a lot of our customers out there. One of the things that I learned in my life is I'm not special at all in my ability to go out and do intervals. I'm not special. Everybody who's competitive goes out and trains hard. Where you get ahead is in better quality sleep. Where you get ahead is in taking care of your body, doing mobility exercises, recovery. These are the areas you really get ahead. And people, they don't see that, right? They get so caught up in just going harder and harder and harder. And there's a certain point, whether you're a pro rider or an amateur rider, where going harder is not the right tool you need to use to build that house anymore. And so it's interesting that that's one of the things you're really passionate about. Hey, Nikki, something that isn't very publicly communicated is the close relationship between the directors and the writers. As more of a mentor figure in the director role, can you think of a moment that stood out to you where you were able to make an impact with your support or mentorship rather than your legs as you were used to as a pro writer?
Yeah, there was, I have a few. Yeah, there was especially one during the Giro d'Italia. I think it was 3 years ago. Alex Dowsett won a stage in the Giro d'Italia from a break.
That was an amazing win. I remember it.
Yeah. And I was his sports director. I was a responsible sports director for that Giro. And before that victory, things weren't going super good for Alex. He was early on, according to him in the season, promised already a contract from the same team, Israel. Right. During the Giro, he was told it's probably not going to happen. So I spoke to him during the race, you know, and he was, of course, very upset about this and very frustrated. We have to think about it. It's their livelihood of these riders. And for some riders, it can actually be that end of your career if you don't get a contract. You know, it's that important. And he was so upset about it that he was, at least to me, talking about, I can't just leave this race, you know, I can make a fuss about this. And I had a very long talk with him and really trying to convince him to stay on point and looking at the bigger goal. And the bigger goal is to right now perform and show the world, the cycling world, that you need a contract for next year. And there's no way to be better way of doing that than going out and doing a result. And then he was at that breakaway. And it was a hard breakaway. Some strong riders in there. And he was dropped late in the final. And when he came back, he attacked just at the moment I asked him to attack to be ahead of the next climb because he wasn't one of the good climbers. He was, and he went home, soloed home. And that win was, I've never cried over my victories as a rider, but I did cry at that point in the car. It was so emotional and to see that big win. And as a sports director, even though, you know, you're just sitting there in the car and helping a little bit, you kind of feel like you have a part in it. That's the wonderful thing, which is also the wonderful thing about being a coach. You know, you feel like you really have part of the success sometimes.
That's amazing.
Another one was if I can mention another one was a writer. The first year as a sports director, I started coaching at the same time as I became a sports director just after I stopped my career, and Tour of Norway. And that was in 2015. The writer that I coached, Jesper Hansen, a Danish writer, he ended up winning a stage in that race and the overall victory. And that was the biggest result that he has made had made at that point and still to this day, the biggest. He's retired now that he has made in his career, you know. And that was also a super emotional, not only to be the sports director, but also to have been behind him as a coach and to help him achieve the biggest result he's ever done. It was super emotional. That was also a point where I was crying afterwards. So it's being a coach is and a sports director is the emotions are sometimes intense in a different way from what the writer experiences it.
It's hard to describe that feeling, right? Where, you know, because you're really in the trenches with the athlete. They're talking to you when things aren't going great. Like you were in the hotel room with Dowsett. Dowsett, what a talent, right? And what a beautiful story that was. I remember that win so clearly. And I remember actually the interview he gave after that stage win where he talked about what he was going through. And he talked about how it had been so hard for him. And so, you know, to learn now that you were on the other side of that, the guy in the hotel room saying, "Hey, Alex, you got this, man. Just, yeah. you know, keep your head screwed on straight. You got everything yeah. you need, you know, all the talent in the world to pull this off. You got to go out and take it because nobody's going to yeah. give it to you." Right. So that's yeah. amazing. And then, you know, like you said, with your other athlete there, those are moments that are really hard to describe, but I do know what you're saying. Like that is a very real thing when one of your athletes does something amazing and you didn't do the work, you're not taking credit for the work, but you feel like you were a part of it. And it's just like an overwhelming feeling of emotion where like, yeah, you want to cry. Like you're like, you're just so proud.
You become so invested. It's also like when you have riders doing races, you sit glued to the television to watch how they're doing, you know, it's,
So you've been coaching, you mentioned now for several years since you started working as a director with some high level riders, you're winning pro races and having some great success. What do you think originally drew you to coaching?
It was, part of one of the reasons was actually that I don't know if you heard professional bike riders talking about when they talk about sports directors, they say one of the things to say that he forgot quickly how it was to be a bike rider. That's one of the things that I've also said that about a few sports directors when I was a rider, you know, you forget pretty quickly how hard it is. That's at least the feeling amongst bike riders and to be complementing my main role, which was a sports director, with coaching riders. I coached around 3 to 4 riders each year, where I was a sports director at the same time, was a way of keeping that I felt like close relationship with the riders, even closer than it is with the sports directors, because with the coach it is the closest relationship I in my opinion. So that was part of it, to be really connected to the riders, and that and at the same time, if you have a team that is maybe not performing 100%, like let's say not a super well functioning team at some instances, then by coaching riders at the same time as being a sports director, you can have an impact in some of the areas that you want to try and develop in the riders and also in the team, because you know how it is with riders. It's also about sometimes the first time you come in and do a big result, the rider does a big result, and then the whole team raises the level, you know. Mm-hmm. You've seen that in team EF education, and you guys are
in all sports. We see it and that happens in every sport. That's just part of being in a group that's succeeding, and not even in all sports, like that happens everywhere in life. When you're on a roll in your company or whatever it is you're doing, like that it's the same feeling, right?
So that was part of it. I wanted to kind of also a little bit like, I didn't know how good I would be as a sports director, so I could also try and have success as a coach at the same time, because I've never seen myself as an expert coach. I'm not, you know, it's not a thing I've never been doing full time. I'm looking forward to learning a lot from you guys. And I'm already learning, but I've never seen myself as an expert coach, but I did know that I could definitely develop a lot of riders and get them up to a certain level and improve them a lot. And that was one of the things I also thought about, like having maybe if sometimes it wasn't too successful on the road as a sports director, you can have the success of being a coach at the same time, combine those things. And I loved it. I loved coaching riders, and I still do this day. So I loved having that combination.
How, you know, we kind of touched on it, a little bit earlier, but I want to hear in your words, how would you describe that feeling you get when you see your athletes transform themselves and their abilities or the people they are over a long period of time. What does that feel like to you watching that?
Well, you become super proud, and you become so invested in how they do. And one thing is also, of course, doing big results out at races when they're doing that. That's of course the ultimate. But also just like feeling that personal development through cycling is also a wonderful thing. But you become extremely invested as a coach, and not only for the good things, but also when it goes bad for the riders, it's tough. It's tough. You've got to sometimes to kind of like work with that part of it as well, you know.
Absolutely. Not everybody has great days every day, and some athletes have we have a director on the women's team by the name of Tim Harris, and he always says cycling is the sport of highest highs and lowest lows. And I think that exists true in the hearts of professional and amateur riders. Whatever your ability is, if you're training for an event and you know you have your heart set on a certain expectation, and you get to the event and you get a flat tire 5 kilometers from the key part of the course and your race is over, like that feeling is heartbreaking. Yeah. Right? It's just, you know, there's no way to describe it. But then the opposite also exists. When you achieve something that's great and you've overcome so many obstacles to be able to achieve it, and you can't even describe all of the different problems you've had to solve and all of the decisions you've had to make that were tough to reach that point of achieving something, that same feeling, like you can't put words around how great that feels. Like your Tour de France stage win, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, it's a silly question to ask you to describe how it felt. And I always laugh when I see that on TV today. I'm like, you know, you see the rider cross the finish line, like, so how do you feel? It's like, you know, good luck. You know, you're like every rider says the same thing. Geez, I don't really know what to say. Cause it's an amazing feeling. Well, you know, I have to wonder, you're coming on board with Team EF Coaching. We're so excited for you to be a part of the team. Where do you see yourself going with this? What's next for Nicky Sorensen?
Well, to start with, I want to learn from you guys, learn the way that you guys are doing it. It's next level coaching. I've already the short time I've been working with you guys, like it's only I'm not even 100% set up yet, but it's getting there. But the short time the few days I've been involved with this, it's obvious to see that this is next level stuff, and I just love being to see myself as a student. I'm in here to learn, and I can learn a lot from you guys. So that's a really interesting thing. I want this to give it a shot at this coaching part. At the same time, I'm doing some TV commentating for Danish television channel. I'm doing a little bit of bike tours as well. So life is good. Life is pretty good. Sports director. I'm not sure. I will come back to that part of it. There's some really nice things to it, but again, it's also, it can be in some situations a really, really stressful job with a lot of days on the road. It's like being as we have to think about these professional bike teams. It's there's so many variables in a normal day of a professional bike team that you can't control. You're traveling around in the whole world with riders living in hotels, flying around with equipment. You're dependent on material manufacturers delivering on time. Then you have things like COVID and stuff like this. And challenges can be really nice, but if you are in teams where it's maybe not at teams that don't have, that are not controlling the things that they actually can control, it can become a little bit too stressful. So I've had a few bad experiences there, but So I'm not sure that the sports director is the future for me. But that's also okay. I've tried it, you know, and then now I'm involved, completely invested in what I'm doing now.
I mean, it speaks a lot of volume for somebody like you to really, you know, come into the program, because, you know, for the past couple of years, we've been working really hard to build out systems and processes and make things, you know, really easy for new coaches to join our program as we, you know, start to scale the business for new coaches to come in and join the program and start to learn what we've been putting out, you know, so far. And so it makes me feel really good to hear that you've been impressed with the training and stuff so far that we've got going. But I have to say, Nikki, you are absolutely not new to coaching. While we have some new ways of doing things and some formulas that might make things a little bit easier to, you know, train somebody to get a great result at their first Gran Fondo, I wouldn't underestimate all the experience you have in the sport, man, because for me, that's just such an amazing thing. And like I said before, we're so, so thrilled to have you on our team.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Thrilled to be here, man. Thanks again for the opportunity, Zach.
My pleasure. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of the Team EF Coaching Podcast. Don't forget, you can support the show by leaving a thumbs up or hitting favorite on this episode and by sharing it with your friends. We do appreciate you spending this last hour with us, and we hope that this episode has helped you increase your cycling knowledge base. So until next time, be well, everyone.